You're listening to the Fueled and Free podcast. I'm your host, Margaret, a holistic nutritionist, bringing you real talk and thought-provoking conversations on food, the wellness world, women's health topics, and life. Remember, the information shared in this podcast is not to be taken as individual or medical advice. Today's guest is Nicole Bendayen. She is a certified holistic nutritionist and was recently featured in the viral Washington Post article titled, "Women Are Getting Off Birth Control Amid Misinformation Explosion." She's the founder of the Sync Society. She educates women about holistic menstrual health, how to optimize their lives, balance hormones, manage menstrual-related issues, and she has, between TikTok and Instagram, a combined 1 million plus followers. The Post reached out to her a few months ago asking if she'd be interested in being interviewed for this particular article that has since gone quite viral. This is an article that was published March 21st. If you follow anyone in the women's health, holistic health space, you've probably seen reposts about this article. It's a very divisive article. And she was made to believe that she would be part of a positive piece on how women are turning to more holistic health practices and away from hormonal birth control. However, the article that was published was not at all what she had anticipated. They misrepresented her, tried to discredit her, dismissed her very real story of being on hormonal birth control and the stories of many others, and flat out denied scientifically backed research. They essentially made her a pawn for their own political agenda. What could have been an open discourse and discussion on women's health and birth control turned into what feels like an attack on those of us in the holistic health space. I brought her on today to share her side of the story and also to bring more awareness to everyone on the dark underbelly that is censorship and continued gaslighting for women. I hope you enjoy. So, Nicole, thank you for being on the podcast. Welcome. I'm super excited to get started and really want to give you the opportunity to share your story of what happened with this crazy viral Washington Post article.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So, and she's joining us all the way from Spain, which is pretty awesome. Tell me a little bit about the timeline of what happened here. I know that they reached out to you via Instagram. How long ago was that?
So that was November 28th. And, you know, we had a little bit of a discussion. She told me that she wanted to interview me about women's hormones and fertility. And I was under the impression that it was going to be a positive article about women moving toward a more holistic view of their cycles and fertility and health. And moving away from birth control. And then, you know, we had a couple of discussions. We talked over Zoom a few times and corresponded through email. And then the Washington Post editor calls me and she's like, "We're really excited to release the article. We're planning on doing it next week. Can someone come to your house to photograph you?" So I was like, "Sure, why not?" And she also informed me that if the article went to print, which it did, that she wanted to send me a few copies. So this is all sounding really positive. When the photographer came to my house, I asked her if she had heard anything about the article or knew anything about it. She had told me that she had read the first draft and, you know, couldn't really disclose what was in it, but said that it was positive and even used the word trailblazing. So I was like, oh, this is super exciting. Of course, I was really nervous when the Washington Post reached out to me because, you know, I know about media and how manipulative it could be, but it was also the Washington Post. So it was a great opportunity. And, you know, when I thought it was going to be a positive article, I was really, really excited about it. And then, you know, that week that it was supposed to be released, nothing happened. Then she followed up with me like 3 weeks later saying that after they got into contact with, I think it was Meta or one of the social media companies, and how they were dispelling misinformation or controlling that, then one of my posts back from 2021 or 2022 was deleted, and she wanted me to comment on that. So I sent her an email with my response, and in that email, I stood behind the post because it was based in research. The post was discussing how certain types of hormonal contraception could potentially increase the risk of some STDs and infections. Mm-hmm. So I told her what the post was about and the research that went behind it, and then also stated that I agree with information or videos being taken down that could have misleading information in it. And she decided just to quote me on that and not include the response that I actually stood behind the article, the post, and that it was based in research and all of that kind of stuff. And going through the article and seeing how they manipulated my words, how they made the entire article about a political stance, which we had never spoken about. And, you know, the paragraph prior to talking about me said something along the lines of influencers of all political stripes seeking fame and fortune. And that threw me off. And then once it stopped talking about me, later on in the article, the next subheading was an underlying conservative push. So I was really upset about that because this isn't a political issue. This is a women's health issue. And it was really unfortunate that they took what could have been a good opportunity to discuss and continue the discourse around women's health and how more research is needed and how women need to be seen and actually cared for in the healthcare space, that they turned it into a political piece that genuinely just seemed like a smash piece and also a promotional piece for the O-pill that's coming out or that recently came out in the States. Mm-hmm. So the first over-the-counter hormonal contraception. And it was really interesting how they kind of manipulated that as well. I made a post about it, talking about how 3 or 4 times throughout the article, they mentioned the link between misinformation about how birth control is associated with mental health conditions. And then further said that women are having testimonials and complaints about depression and anxiety and so on. But specifically, the progestin in contraception is what is linked to mood disorders, increased risk of depression, and especially increased risk of lifetime depression when starting hormonal contraception prior to being 20. So it was really shady, I would say, to be honest.
First of all, I'm so sorry that you went through that. It sounds like they really kind of, you know, pulled one over on you. And it is a shame that it was so politicized, because you're right, the conversation should be surrounding and even just opening up a conversation or discourse surrounding women's health. And again, the lack of informed consent.
Yes.
You know, that TikTok video that was taken off, you said that was from 2021.
Yeah, 2021 or 2022.
And that had, I was looking this up, you had 10.5 million views on that one video, right?
So actually, the video that was referred to in the article was taken down prior to the article coming out.
Okay.
But my most viral TikTok that was discussing my personal experience on hormonal contraception and how I had a ton of negative symptoms and was dismissed by doctors, etc., that one was taken down just a few days ago.
Okay, I saw you post about that. Okay.
So
mad for you. So the other one that was taken down from 2021, did that get pulled down because Washington Post reached out to TikTok to discuss your account? Or
it seems as such, because I wasn't aware that it was taken down. I got the email from the Washington Post reporter saying that the post was taken down and if I was aware of it, et cetera. And I said no. And then in the article, it stated that when they reached out to this company, that 5 TikToks were deleted because of misinformation. And that included one of mine. So that implies to me that it was in response to them reaching out is when my TikTok was taken down.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Very, very interesting. So one of the things too that I was frustrated with for you with that article, and this is something that I've experienced, you know, I'm also in the holistic health space and work with clients, and, you know, you get that kind of accusation from people of like, you're not a doctor. You're not a medical professional. Once upon a time, I had a TikTok go viral and it had over a million views, and it was spliced by different OBGYNs and doctors on TikTok. And they, you know, essentially like made fun of me of like, oh, here's this holistic nutritionist talking about cortisol. It was a video specifically talking about why we shouldn't like slam coffee and do a fasted workout.
Mm-hmm.
Not good for our hormones, which you probably would agree with. And multiple doctors spliced it and just completely slammed me, discredited. She's not a doctor. Don't listen to people like this. You know, and it was like a 14-second video, which we know there's only so much nuance you can give in short form content. And on TikTok, you can't even really write a caption.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you keep going with that type of backlash? You know, what kind of like helps you push through when you have that?
Honestly, when I read the article, and, you know, I've had a similar experience as well with, you know, the whole, you're not a doctor. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, that's the whole point. You know, like, that's actually the whole point. Because when I started my journey in holistic nutrition, it was in response to the lack of care that I got from the healthcare system. The fact that I suffered for years with negative symptoms and would go to my doctor and, you know, it was either here's a different prescription for you or sucks to be you. Don't know. Who cares? And, you know, when I was on birth control, I had a lot of negative symptoms. So I went to go see like four different doctors within 3 years. Every single one of them dismissed me. So when people come at me saying that you're not a doctor and we shouldn't listen to you because you're not a doctor, my response is usually the fact that, yeah, that's the point. Doctors have a recommended 25 hours of nutritional training to get their MDs, and majority of schools don't even hit those hours. Mm-hmm. So that just shows how little preventative care is in the system. And, you know, I've spoken to a lot of doctors throughout the years saying that, hey, we don't get enough information about nutrition. We don't really get enough information about women's health, even.
Or the hormones.
Absolutely. The fact that, you know, women are just prescribed hormonal contraception for almost any women's health issue. And the reality is that there is the science that backs up what we talk about, and it's just being dismissed and discredited, but the science is there. And, you know, I think once that video that has recently been taken down, the 10.5 mil video, I got an influx of women messaging me, commenting how they've been dismissed, how they weren't given support. You know, now that I've worked with over 500 clients, I've gotten tons of messages about how I wish that I knew this before. You know, I wish that I was able to be an advocate for my own health through my doctors as well. And that's really what I focus on a lot, is being able to be an active participant in your healthcare. You know, I had one client who, we kind of went through everything. And of course, I'm not a medical professional, so I can't say, I'm not diagnosing anybody, but I'm saying it seems like you might have PCOS. Go to your doctor and see if you can get diagnosed or if that's the case. So she goes to her doctor. She ends up getting diagnosed. Her doctor automatically starts writing her a prescription for birth control. But because we work together, and we prepped a little bit for this appointment, she turns to her doctor and she's like, oh, if I do X, Y, Z with my diet and lifestyle, do you think that could help? And the doctor's like, yeah, that could probably help. What? Like, why wasn't that the first line of defense? You know, I support access to birth control. I think it's essential to have access to hormonal contraception. And I don't think with most doctors that it's coming from any place of malice. But the fact is, women aren't provided with care in the healthcare system.
Yep. Yep. Or the informed consent.
Yes.
Yeah. So when you went on birth control, I think I read that you were on off and on for 10 years, which is a similar story to me as well. Did you start it for the purpose of like regulating your cycle or to prevent pregnancy? Or were you one of the people that started it because you had bad periods and they told you it would fix it for you?
No, I was one that was just for pregnancy prevention.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I went on it when I was like 16 or 17. And I started with NuvaRing because I had a couple conversations with a friend who was on it. And she was like, no, it's great because you don't have to worry about taking a pill every day and all this stuff. And I was like, that sounds like something I could do because I'm definitely not going to remember to take a pill every day. But ended up going on it and loved it for a couple of years. You know, I felt fine. And of course, I was young, so there was a lot of going on anyways. But it's difficult now to really understand the impact that birth control had on me long term, which is kind of upsetting because pretty much like since I had these hormones, since I got my period, pretty much, I was on synthetic hormones. And, you know, no doctor ever walked me through the potential side effects. No doctor ever tried to screen for pre-existing conditions or risk factors. So for instance, as progestin in the birth control contributing potentially to an increased risk of depression and anxiety, you know, my doctor never asked me if I had a history of that, which I did. And then for the subsequent many years, I suffered a lot with anxiety and depression. And it's unfortunate that I didn't feel I was really an active participant in my healthcare. And, you know, I went from being on NuvaRing to then I went on to the IUD for a couple of years. And because of that shift of being on a combination type birth control with estrogen and progestin, and then going on a progestin only, there was already some changes. So my hair got a lot curlier, my body shape changed. And then once I got off the IUD, all of those other symptoms went away of the recurring infections and the vaginal atrophy and the bleeding, and a lot of the anxiety and depression went away. So it's really unfortunate that I had that experience, but I'm also really grateful that I had that experience because it's allowed me to do what I do now.
Yeah. So part of your mission into getting into the line of work that you do was created from your own experience, which is really powerful. And I think that's the case for a lot of people that are in the holistic health space, born out of a like, we got to change this and I want to be part of the solution, right? I had a similar experience as well. In high school, it was like everyone got on birth control. Everyone. That was the norm, the brown paper bag. Here's your samples. Knowing what you know now, would you have gone on at 16?
No, not a chance. Not a chance. I would never have put myself through that, let alone the negative side effects, but also the disconnect from myself as a cyclical being. And, you know, me now in the holistic health space came from, yes, my experience on birth control and in the healthcare system, but then it turned into, you know, I was doing my certifications in holistic nutrition and going off of birth control at a similar time. And then I started doing research into the side effects. Yes, I found all of my the side effects that I was experiencing. But then that's when I found out that there was four phases to my menstrual cycle. And I was just flabbergasted.
Great.
Flabbergasted that here I am thinking I'm really well educated. I'm going through a journey in holistic nutrition. I was super into biohacking and all of those different things. And I didn't even know that there was four phases to my cycle. It was just, you know, it felt like such a letdown. And that's when I started talking to other women and found out they also knew nothing. And almost everyone that I spoke to suffered from some sort of menstrual related issue, whether that be PMS or painful periods or PCOS, et cetera, and knew absolutely nothing. And also didn't know where to find the resources that would be able to give them the confidence to really understand what was going on in their bodies. So
I love that. Yeah. So when you had your interview with Washington Post, were any of these things discussed on the interview?
In what capacity?
Like, did they ask you, I'm curious, you know, in the context of the interview, did they just interview you specifically about the misinformation side of things on birth control? Or do they more ask you about your personal story with what happened with birth control and what you teach on social media and your, you know, your program and everything?
Yeah. So they asked me a lot about my personal experience, my personal story. You know, I sent her a list of all of my certifications. And of course, that was not included in the article.
None
whatsoever. No, three times they mentioned that I wasn't a doctor, but never once the credentials that I actually do have. And, you know, even in the article, it said something of I was, quote unquote, concerned about side effects such as low libido, weight gain, et cetera, that I assumed were from hormonal contraception. And in the conversations that we had, I spoke about the different side effects that I had that were debilitating, that I went to go see all of these doctors, that, you know, this might be TMI, but nothing's TMI for me. But like, I bled after sex every single time for like 4 years because, you know, of the hormonal contraception.
Yes.
And that was something that got in the way of my regular life. The fact that I couldn't hold food down because I was constantly nauseous and all of these different things that I did explain how severe my symptoms were, how they impeded on my regular life. And then to go and say that I was concerned about low libido and weight gain.
And you're assumed that they were side effects of birth control.
Yeah. Low libido wasn't my biggest issue. Weight gain was not my biggest issue. My biggest issue was that I was physically sick, you know? And yeah, it was upsetting how much they tried to minimize it and dismiss me and so many other women's experiences with hormonal contraception.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw. Yeah, it's not surprising. I think the other frustrating piece to this is it's further exposing the continued censorship for people that are in the holistic health space, whether you're talking about birth control or the overprescribing of antibiotics or the vaccine conversation. It's all part of this dark underbelly of we're not allowed to share our experience and our real stories.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. It is one thing to dismiss the real stories that people have with that. And then it's another thing to dismiss the science and education and credentials that somebody has and their ability to actually provide valuable information to the public. Because I think it also has a lot to do with that. There's been quite a few wellness space influencers, creators, podcasters who have been bashed in recent articles by big publications. And it seems like a lot of the reason is because people are now looking to others away from, you know, mainstream media to provide them with quality information that's easily accessible and easy to understand. And, you know, there is a conversation to be had about does mainstream media, does political entities, et cetera, want the public to actually be informed? Or is it easier to allow us to not be informed so that we just follow this quote unquote authority that we've always, you know, afforded to these institutions?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so you're originally from Canada, right?
Yeah.
I have a good friend that's also in the holistic health space and she lives in Calgary. Mm-hmm. She was not even able to access the Washington Post thing on her Instagram. It was blocked.
Yeah. I got a couple of people that sent that to me too.
What do you think about that?
There's a lot of words. I've been out of Canada for a while, so I'm not up to date with all of the censorship information, but I do know that Trudeau has been pushing a lot of censorship with social media and stuff like that. And, you know, I think it's a disservice to people and to the public. You know, like I was quoted in the article saying that I agree with posts being taken down that could perpetuate potentially dangerous or misinformation that could harm somebody. Yes. But the fact is that they're censoring a lot more than that. And they're censoring to, it seems, to political benefit.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, we're in a day and age now where even the word birth control on a post or on a caption or within a reel, you run the risk of that not getting as many views within the algorithm. It's crazy. It's crazy. Does that influence how you do content as someone that, you know, you're mainly enrolling and building a business through social media, correct?
Yeah.
How does that influence you from the content side of things and how you show up on social media? Are you worried about losing your TikTok at all?
Slightly. Because since this last video was taken down, I now have like, there's something like 3 or 4 slashes and then potential of suspension or deletion of your TikTok account. You know, being in the social media space, there's always that risk of losing it. So I've always kind of had a little bit of a fear when it comes to that.
Mm-hmm.
But also with the understanding that the work that I do is important and I'm going to keep doing the work regardless. So if that's going to be on social media, if that's me reaching out and doing podcasts or media appearances or talks, whatever it is, I'm going to keep doing the work.
Yeah.
Yes, I don't want it to interfere with my business and my ability to genuinely help people and to get this information out there and to encourage the discourse when it comes to women's health, birth control, fertility, et cetera, and hormones. But overall, I try not to let it influence my content because I don't want it to kind of take away from the content that I'm able to create, I guess. You know, a lot of people will bleep out certain words. I don't do that because vagina is a vagina. It's anatomy. If that gets taken down because I say vagina, then, you know, what I'm trying to do in a lot of capacity is also normalize these conversations and empower women to speak about them in a casual way. And I think that that is why I've been able to build such a platform on social media, because I think that I'm able to deliver the information in a way that's easy to understand and casual and just like, hey, this is what it is, you know, and breaking down those stigmas in that kind of way, I think is important. So I try not to let that influence my content, but maybe it's something I should consider a little bit more.
Oh my gosh, it's stressful. Yeah. I had my Instagram taken down for about a week and a half, like a little over a year ago. They flagged a video and said that it violated community guidelines. And I had the most full-blown panic. I was like, oh my gosh, this is like my platform. This is how I connect. Yeah. And, you know,
livelihood.
My livelihood, right. I was thankfully able to get it back on because I have a friend who knows people that work at Meta. And I literally got on the phone and was like, Jenna, I need your help. You know people. And she helped resurrect my account. But it's definitely something that I think about when I go to create content, because you get those spicy moments as a practitioner, and you go through this as well, where whether it's through, you know, a client call that you have, or I don't know if you do group coaching, but you hear these stories from the women that you work with, and it shapes how you want to teach and the message that you want to get out. And you have those spicy, fiery moments where you're like, I want to get on and talk about this. This is really important. Other people need to hear this. But then I walk that other side where I'm like, ooh, this could ruffle some feathers or maybe be taken down, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting in response to the Washington Post article, because I came out with a 6-part series of how the Washington Post misled me, misrepresented me, and dismissed scientific research. So I fully went after the Washington Post. And also, I guess in that sort of capacity as well, Jeff Bezos and Amazon and Big Pharma in a lot of ways, and put myself out there as someone who is talking against this, you know, and having that post going viral, or sorry, having that article go viral, because I've seen so many creators in the wellness space talking about the article, posting about it, this uproar about this article. And I'm, you know, one of the main focuses on it. And so it's given, you know, in one capacity, a lot of really great attention from others in the wellness space and other women who have found my content now because of that. But also me going after or standing up against these big corporations, that's kind of made me a little bit, not scared, but, you know, it is a little bit nerve-wracking. And especially now having that last video being taken down off of TikTok, it's like, oh, so you guys are coming at me. Okay.
In fact, I have it pulled up right now on Instagram. They've limited comments. You can't even comment anymore on that post that Washington posted on Instagram.
Oh, yeah. 2 days after it was taken down. They opened it up again right after. They'd taken it down or stopped allowing comments for a couple of hours, and then they reopened them and then they shut them off again. And even on the article itself, on the Washington Post website, you can't. They've shut down comments.
That speaks volumes.
Yes, absolutely.
It really does. So one of the things I wanted to bring up is in the article, they reference, you know, the reality that we live in a country where abortion is banned or restricted in nearly half the states. And doctors are disagreeing with those of us that are pushing natural alternatives to birth control, like cycle syncing, in lieu of that. What are your thoughts on that?
So it's a slightly convoluted space, because when you're looking at natural family planning for pregnancy prevention, there's multiple different types of fertility awareness methods. For me, I only ever recommend the symptothermal method. That's the only one I'll recommend. That's the one I teach my clients because it's the most effective, mm-hmm. right? The calendar or rhythm method is not effective, and it shouldn't be used as a form of contraception. But the symptothermal method is highly effective. It's comparable to the birth control pill. So that is definitely one thing. And also, I've gotten quite a few comments of, you know, available in some states, there's risk associated with, you know, the political climate in the states, and also the financials of people who can't afford an abortion or can't afford a child. And my response to that is exactly why we need to know about the symptothermal method and how to do it, because it is low cost. You don't need access to contraception or need access to anything else aside from a basal body temperature monitor and mm-hmm. education, right? So from a financial perspective, it is essential, because it gives people who don't have the financial capabilities of getting contraception to still be able to manage their fertility with a high level of effectiveness. And also with abortion, some people don't have access to abortion. And so they need to know, if they don't have access to other forms of contraception, how can they avoid pregnancy naturally? And that is the symptothermal method, because that is the most effective.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's for sure the bigger piece of the conversation that needs to happen, which will require a lot of reform within the education system. Really, that's where it goes back to. You know, I even have conversations with some of my friends that are now raising teenage daughters, and you know, they know what my stance is on birth control. And I have a daughter who's 10 and not cycling yet, but we're already starting to have conversations surrounding, like, your period and, you know, why tell her, like, I'm in my luteal phase. I need to take a bath. Last night I was like, I'm in my luteal. I need to take a bath. Like, you know, I need some alone time. And so my hope, and I'm sure you probably feel the same, is that as we educate more women, like, that will just continue to trickle down into the younger generation. I thought it was interesting in the article too, how they commented on, like, Gen Zers are declining birth control at rapid rates and the rise of social media misinformation. And I'm like, good, good.
Which, that's anecdotal. Because
it is anecdotal. Absolutely.
Because we don't actually, the numbers aren't there. If anything, so there was a study done.
And no one's tracking that. No one's tracking, like, the ratio of what generation is taking birth control versus not. I mean,
so there is a survey, the national survey, I can't remember the full name, but it tracked the birth control rates from 2002 and then 2017, 2019, mm-hmm. and compared it. And birth control has actually increased, but I don't know if it was manipulated in the Washington Post or if they just left that out and made it anecdotal, but more people are going off of the combination pill, but they're going toward other forms of hormonal contraception, such as the IUD, implant, shot, contraceptive ring, et cetera. So up until 2019, there hadn't been a decline. If anything, there was actually an increase of birth control use. And that might, you know, you might have to factor in population growth and stuff like that. But the Washington Post presented it as fact that more people are going off of hormonal contraception or not starting hormonal contraception, but that's totally anecdotal at this point.
Okay. Okay. That's interesting. Yeah, it is very anecdotal. And I think part of them just pushing the political agenda in the article. my question for you, one of the things I wanted to ask you for your perspective on is a lot of the IUDs, like for example, the Mirena, are recommended to be put in for 5 years. And I had this conversation with a friend of mine who works as a nurse in obstetrics. And she said, you know, we don't actually recommend if their IUD expires that they have to come in and have it changed or taken out. It actually is effective. The 5-year thing is just kind of a manufacturer recommendation. Have you heard this? I have not.
No.
Me digging. It was a conversation we had the other day. And I'm like, really? Really? You're not having people take out their IUD after 5 years? The Mirena specifically is what we were talking about.
No, I haven't heard about this. That's definitely something I want to look into because that sounds a little suspicious. You know, I can't really comment on that.
Okay. Yeah. I was just curious if you, within your own research or working with clients, but yeah, I would agree. I think you do see a lot of IUD pushed on people. One of the questions I wanted to ask you is you were kind of lumped into the right wing side of things. You know, one of the things they said were, oh, right wing commentators in the article. How did that make you feel?
I'm upset. I mean, because it's also the fact that I'm not really into politics. I'm into women's health. I couldn't actually articulate my political stance because I don't actually know where, like, I'm very center. So I'm really not sure where they got off calling me a right-wing conservative. But I think that there is, you know, we could get into talking about politics, and I do have quite a bit to say about left and right wing, because on both sides, there's positives and negatives.
Yeah.
But overall, I think that it was pretty disgraceful that they made it into a political piece and also made me into a political piece and commented on my political leanings or implied my political leanings, having not spoken to me about politics whatsoever.
Yeah, was that up in the interview at
all? No, not once. Not once, not at all. Absolutely not. And if it was, I would have pretty much said the same thing of, I don't really do politics. I do menstrual health. And I believe in access to birth control. I believe in access to abortion. I believe in access to human rights. And I don't think that women are given informed consent when it comes to it, et cetera. But it definitely was upsetting. Just, yeah, it didn't really line up, I guess, is all that it really was. They tried to push something onto me that doesn't necessarily align with me. And, you know, talking about, I think what I was most upset about with the political leaning aspect of it was the fact that, like, right-wing commentators are pushing people to get off of birth control and restricting rights and access to abortion. You know, I've raised money for abortion rights. I've spoken a lot about abortion rights, and I 100% support access to abortion because that is medical care, that is health care. And the fact that they lumped me in with that and implied some of my leanings was definitely upsetting and pretty disgraceful on their end.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. That's crazy. Oh, you've had a wild week and a half.
A little bit, but also a lot of really great things have come out of this. So I think overall it's a net positive. Would I want to be dragged by the Washington Post again? Probably not. But the way that it happened, the looseness of the article and how see-through it was, I think really benefited me as well, because people could really see through the political agenda and the dismissing of women, et cetera. So I think in that capacity, it ended up being all right for me. I've been able to get into contact with really cool creators and healthcare professionals and different people that then enables me to come on podcasts like this and continue the discourse and continue spreading the word and making this hopefully public knowledge and general knowledge. Hopefully at some point in time, all of this becomes general knowledge and, you know.
Yeah, keep fighting the good fight. I think it's just part of, you know, part of the story and the journey of what you're doing. And I think things like this, like while it's, yeah, probably frustrating on your part, just even energetically, you know, yes, will it open doors or potentially, you know, it's definitely fuel to the fire to keep showing up and doing what you're doing. Absolutely. But it's also energetically draining to have to, you know, spend so much time defending your platform and what you're doing.
I'm really proud of myself with
you should
how
be. I was going to say, you should be proud of yourself. You should be.
Yeah, I am really proud of myself with how I handled it. And yeah. I think I got a lot of peace from that in itself. And then the level of support has just been so incredible. You know, there, of course, there was a point in time right when the article came out that I was like freaking out a little bit. But I think, you know, since I came out with the multi-part response and everything since then has given me a lot of strength and power to continue the conversation and has shown me just how important my work is and the work that we all do in the holistic space, as long as we're doing it ethically and, yeah. you know, we're backing ourselves up with the science. It's just solidified, I think, my integrity and drive to continue the conversation.
Yeah, I love it. Yep. Keep fighting the good fight and build an email list while you're at it.
I do have an email list. Yes. I just need to utilize it all.
This would be about the point in time you're like, okay, guys, time to get on my email. Yeah. You know,
exactly. I need to start a Substack. I don't even really know what that is, but it's coming out.
No, I think you'll be fine. I think you'll be fine. I love it. Well, thank you so much for being on and sharing your story. And I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Fueled and Free podcast. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Learn more at margaretannpowell.com and follow me on Instagram at margaretannpowell. We'll be right back.